This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290 online at TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For 30 years this month, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. All sold out this entire weekend. The Broken Lizard guys have been in town, completely sold out. Both shows tonight, no tickets are available. Still a few tickets available for the 30th anniversary concert series event coming up next weekend, November 14th and 15th. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Get them now as they are going very quickly. Derek Edwards, Mike Wilmot, Daryl Lennox, and Dave Hempstead. The 30th anniversary special event next weekend at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Gentleman Carter Ashton of the Toronto Maple Leafs was suspended earlier this week for a violation of the NHL's drug policy. Mm-hmm. As anybody who gets suspended for drugs, it's never purposeful. They never admit that they actually were taking it to get an advantage or improve their skill set or become a better hockey player and get a bigger contract. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was an accident. Allow us to go through Mr. Ashton's excuse.
You sound skeptical, Drew.
I'm a little bit skeptical. Maybe it's just me and I respond to medical emergencies differently than other people. But here's from Mr. Ashman, the statement released by the National Hockey League Players Association. I suffered an asthmatic spasm in late August while in a training session getting prepared for the 2014-15 NHL season. One of the other athletes I was training with gave me an inhaler in order to help open my airway, which provided me with immediate relief from my asthma attack. Let's stop right there. I'm in the midst of a training session, and I certainly don't work out nearly as hard as these professional athletes do.
Or at all.
And I'm having trouble breathing. What's your first response? Is your first response is, hey, Jim, that I'm training with, do you happen to have an inhaler on you? Because I think I'm going to take that rather than go visit a doctor for a serious medical issue that potentially could affect my livelihood as an athlete.
That part of the story is like the most believable part, which shows you that it's not exactly the most believable story overall.
Let me ask, have you ever used... You're not asthmatic. I don't believe either of you have ever been asthmatic.
When I was younger, I did actually have asthma, but
okay.
But I just want to, you know,
that explains
mention,
a lot.
I just want to mention before
lack of oxygen
before we
brain.
Continue, Drew here, that I've never inhaled.
That's good. That's good.
So,
to know. Thank you for clarifying that.
But I did have to use a, I called it a puffer. But, you know,
let me interrupt you right there. So you were asthmatic and you had an inhaler with you.
Yep.
At any point in time, did a friend of yours come over to you in the midst of a training session while having an asthma attack himself and say, Ezzy, I need your inhaler. I'm having an asthma attack.
I think we have to get like sponsored by like an inhaler company now, because I think we just, you know, wrote a commercial here live on the air. But no, I mean, well, I was younger.
Problem inhaling those donuts.
We're talking about like I had asthma when I was like 7 to 12,
right,
or something like that. But let's be honest here. I mean, Carter Ashton's, you know, obviously son of former Jet Brent Ashton. He took this substance. He knew what he was doing.
Let me continue
and
with
the
statement.
He hasn't. Okay, you want to continue the statement? Yes. But to me, this is all a bunch of nonsense because he's not appealing the suspension.
Of course. So he has used this inhaler from a random person he's training with. Mm-hmm. You know. Okay. Maybe. Mm-hmm. But you know. Boy, I'm going to go to a doctor and get this checked out.
Right.
That might be something a logical person would say. Mm-hmm. Instead. Going back to his statement, I kept this inhaler and used it a second time early in the training camp upon experiencing another asthma episode.
Okay, so that's where the skepticism really should kick in. First of all, you're at training camp with medical professionals around you at all times.
Sure. You've gone through a physical prior to the beginning of training camp.
And you also have doctors available at all times to speak to, and you have access, and really nobody else has. You also decided to, instead of giving the inhaler back to your friend, say, hey, you know what? Clearly you don't need the inhaler that you had on you at that time. I'll just keep it. And then I'll use it randomly. When all these doctors are around, I'll just use the inhaler that my friend gave me instead of speaking to a professional. It's like, you know, that story seems a little bit, a little far-fetched.
No, I mean, it's funny. It's obviously, the story never happened. I mean, that none of that ever happened. And even if it did, some of it happened. It's not going to excuse what he took. I mean, clenbuterol, in 2012, Guillermo Mota was suspended for using that in the majors. Same substance. Well, this is in baseball, it's the same thing. I mean, they know what this is. Well, so I mean, this is a banned substance. If you have asthma, you don't take this. You take something
else. Let's talk about clenbuterol. You know, well, boy, it's got a big medical name. I'm sure it's got to be healthy for people. Clenbuterol is not approved for human use in either Canada or the U.S.
So you're in luck, Drew.
Because I'm not a human, or I'm not in Canada or the United States.
So, like, if you're a horse,
it was designed for horses. Again, I'm going to repeat that. It is designed for horses.
That have asthma?
No, I just think horses.
Horses have asthma?
I'm going to guess not, but I'm not an equine expert, so, you know.
I went horseback riding this past fall.
I have been to Kentucky, but I'm not an equine expert. So he was using it for horses, or it's designed for horses, but it is one of the most popular banned weight loss drugs, one that's popped up again and again in boxing, cycling, and baseball. It's huge among bodybuilders looking to get cut and is on the blacklist of the IOC and every major sports league. So
why would a horse take clenbuterol?
I don't think the horse takes it. The horse is given it. The horse doesn't trot out and be like, I want some clenbuterol.
No, I know, but it, like, what does it do for the horse? Is this for, like, horse racing, or is it for, like, a painkiller, or... I'm just asking. I don't know.
I don't know what it does for
horses. You're
the one
that seems to have a pharmacy degree over here.
Well, I'm not sure what it does for horses. I don't really think that's terribly relevant to the purposes of this conversation, because I've never seen a horse play hockey. Admittedly, that would be impressive. But, I mean... Okay, let's get back to the, you know, 20 games for Carter Ashton.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Is that sufficient?
Yep.
I think that's sufficient?
I think so. I think that's also what it says in the CBA as far as...
Sorry, a two-part question. One, is it sufficient, and how prevalent do you think the use of drugs, performance-enhancing drugs, is in the NHL?
Is it sufficient 20 games, so you're looking at a quarter of the season? I like to see those suspensions be more heavy-handed, but... I
mean, forfeits $170,000 in salary. And Carter Ashton, by the way, is a guy that only has 50 NHL games experience. Mm-hmm. He's only played 3 games this year, Richie. He played 30 games last year. But he's not a guy that has a regular spot in the Leafs lineup.
Doesn't that probably speak to maybe the possibility of him feeling like he needs to do something like this because he feels like he needs to make the team?
Sure.
I think so.
Performance-enhancing, as it were.
How, you know, again, speculating, of course, but how prevalent is the use of this and any other substances in NHL? I think it's pretty common, I would guess. I mean, hockey isn't suddenly, and we talked about this on the pregame show with Paul Wiesek and Rick on Thursday. You know, it's not like hockey somehow avoids the use of these things while baseball, basketball, and football suddenly, you know, lots of those players use. I mean, come on. This guy, if he tests positive for this, the use of this drug, I mean, did he suddenly start using it, or was he taken before? Are there masking agents? There's many questions to ask here. To think that the NHL, with very little, you know, in the way of drug positive drug tests, suddenly, you know, has nobody in the league is using. I would think that's a stretch, a big, big stretch.
Yeah, we don't know how many players are using substances like clenbuterol. You know, I picked up the Derek Bugard book recently. Haven't read it yet. But I'm meaning to read it, and I imagine it. You know, it's written by, I believe it was John Branch of the New York Times.
That's right.
I imagine he's going to talk a lot about how easy it is for some of these players in the NHL and other professional sports leagues to get prescriptions for the painkillers and all that. And to me, this is actually a positive thing in the sense that now we can say that, okay, he was caught and he's going to be suspended. And you got to think that if Carter Ashton wants to have a career in the NHL, he's never going to take anything like this again. Because I imagine if he takes anything like this again, it'll be probably a full season next time.
It's 60 games his next suspension. So it's 20 for the first game.
And for a guy like him, that's a full season.
Yeah. Second game, the second positive test is a 60-game suspension. And the third positive test is a permanent suspension. But the player will be eligible to apply for reinstatement after 2 years.
And again, Drew, you know, back to, you know, Carter Ashton, what Richie was saying about he might feel some pressure to be taking something to get into better shape. It's just not good to put that stuff in your body. It's just not healthy. I mean, you mentioned it. This is a substance that was designed for horses, not humans. So it might give you an advantage, but, you know, are you taking years off your life? Are you putting yourself in a situation where you can have a heart attack or lead to mental problems and stuff like that? So it's good to know that the NHL is identifying this and punishing players when they're caught.
Now, the problem is the testing standards likely aren't up to, you know, what you'd like them to be. I don't think they're up to IOC standards. I'm not sure about that, however. But, you know, Donald Fehr is the head of the PA.
Sure.
And Donald Fehr is a very qualified individual, but presided over quite an interesting, controversial time in Major League Baseball.
It's putting it politely.
Yeah, and so is he the kind of guy you're going to make a ton of headway with getting stricter testing in place? And the late Michael Wiener, who took over for Donald Fehr, was pretty important in getting new testing in place in baseball. And the idea is, and the perspective is, and I agree with this perspective, is that when you don't have stricter testing in place, you're hurting the players in your union that aren't using.
Sure.
Because the players that are using are getting ahead and costing the other players more money who are doing it the right way. And so I always feel like that should be the rationale behind stricter testing in all these leagues. But it just isn't the case.
Well, I hope that the stricter testing comes in. I mean, you know, again, talking about a guy like Derek Boogaard, which is completely tragic what happened with him. And, you know, you'd hope that the NHL and the NHLPA is going to work together because, you know, you can't have this type of stuff, these guys using this type of stuff. It's just not good. It leads to other things. It's just not good to put that stuff in your body.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL and discuss the lack of trading action so far this season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Online, TSN 1290.ca. Still to join us. 10 minutes time, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette to talk about the Canadiens of Montreal as the Jets will play there on Tuesday night. So we figured we'd touch base with our good friend Pat and talk about the Habs. Stay tuned for that in about 10 minutes. You know, you look around the NHL nowadays, and we've heard it, and it's sort of a cliche, but it is true, about just how difficult it is for teams to make a trade, especially a significant in-season trade. Mm-hmm. You know, the last really major in-season trade, aside from the trade deadline, is going back to last year when Thomas Vanek went from Buffalo to the New York Islanders. Now, we know that trade did not work out for the Islanders, but that was really the last trade of any significance during the course of the season. You know, has the NHL sort of gotten boring in that front? During the regular season, it's just sort of the games happen and there's nothing ancillary aside from the games during the course of the 82-game regular season?
Well, I think you have to separate the two because I think hockey's still exciting. I mean, I still get excited to watch all of the games, and especially when you are there really good games and are there some games that are just whatever? Of course. I mean, there's over 1,000 games, right, Drew? So, I mean, not every single game is going to be a Cadillac. You're going to have a Chrysler LeBaron in there sometimes. So, I mean, you look at that Winnipeg Jets, Pittsburgh Pink. Well, you're shaking your head. I thought that was...
It's great. Where did that come from, though?
I'm just saying, I mean, you could say some are a Picasso and then some are a Ginsburg.
So, that ain't that
true. Or if you want to say that, I don't know, whatever you want to say. I'm just saying...
Dear God.
Every single hockey game is not going to be like the Winnipeg Jets, Pittsburgh Penguins game from Thursday night. So, but as far as what you're talking about ancillary stuff, the trading and all of that off-ice stuff, I think it definitely has gotten boring. I mean, how many trades do we see now during the regular season? And obviously the Islanders made the two moves to acquire Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk back in early October before the regular season started. But since then, I mean, we've seen a bunch of really minor moves. And, you know, can you expect there to be a Joe Thornton Boston to San Jose trade every year, or a Kyle, pardon me, Tyler Seguin trade to Dallas going from Boston. I mean, you can't expect a big trade like that every year.
None of those
year.
Have ever happened in season. That's my, I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the off season because that's when teams. The Thornton did. Yeah. How many years
that was
ago
in 05.
Was
that? Well, that's what I'm saying. But I'm just, my point was, can you expect, I mean, fans love it, and we love it, obviously, because we can talk about it and all that, but it's not just that, it's just like, there's no trades at all, and, you know, there's so many teams right now, what's the number one position teams are looking for right now? Defensemen,
mm-hmm.
and you can't find any defensemen. New York Rangers have you know, trying Thomas Caberle on a tryout right now. New Jersey Devils had him a tryout, and Philadelphia Flyers picked up Carlo Colaiacovo because they have so many injuries there. I know Braden Coburn's coming back, but I mean, it's because of the salary cap and the fact that all of the players now that are either in their second or third contracts are locked up now. So you just don't have many guys on the trade market. I mean, you know, you hear the names Antoine Vermette on Arizona might be available, or Alexander Semin. Who's picking up Alexander Semin $7 million per year? Like, he's not getting traded.
Nobody.
So who's getting traded, and who wants to trade? I mean, who knows at this point?
You have to look at the cap room, too. Guys. I mean, Los Angeles, St. Louis, Chicago, Washington, Boston, Pittsburgh all can't even add a salary over $1 million right now.
Well, the Los Angeles Kings are going to talk about in the last hour are going to play a player short tonight because of salary cap troubles.
And you look at the other teams, I mean, very few teams can add a salary of even $6 million. And so if you're going to try and make a trade and take on any money, it's difficult. And the teams at the bottom, Ottawa, Calgary, Buffalo, I mean, they have no incentive really to do that right now, at least, especially like teams like Buffalo, not going to take on money. Maybe to get a pick with them at the end, but there's just so little room to move in that cap world, and that's what the cap does, is it does limit activity. I mean, you look at the only league without a cap, baseball, of the big four, mm-hmm. baseball. You see a lot of trades in baseball, a lot of activity, a lot of moves. In football, you hardly ever see trades. Yeah. In basketball, very rare as well. And in hockey, they're becoming more rare as well. I mean, if you're going to have a cap, that structure, it's going to limit movement. And it's going to be more. I actually don't like the cap. I would like to see a luxury cap system. I've talked about that before, long ago on the show. But this is a product of a cap system. You're not going to have many transactions. And sure, you'll get the moves at the end when at the end of the season they've banked more money for deadline space. And remember, you're paying a guy for 15 games, so you take his salary over that amount of time. You can sneak in more contracts. But otherwise, it's tough.
And I wouldn't be surprised if we see a trade coming up towards the end of November and on well before the trade deadline. I mean, there will be trades. I'm not saying there's going to be a blockbuster, but you have teams right now that they need defensemen. I look at New Jersey. I look at Dallas, two teams that right now are below the playoff line, mm-hmm. and you can see that they would love to add a puck-moving defenseman, but you know, how is it going to work out? You look at the LA Kings. Drew, I know you want to talk about it later. LA Kings might dress five defensemen tonight because of what Slava Voyanov's contract is doing to their salary cap situation. They have no salary cap room. They're not getting any salary cap relief. So you'd have to think maybe they would make a move to... I mean, Voyanov, it's kind of not certain what's going to happen with Voyanov if he's going to play. But if Voyanov can't play, I mean, you're talking about a top four defenseman there, playing with Robin Regier on mm-hmm. the Stanley Cup winning team last mm-hmm. year. So, I mean, you know, are the LA Kings going to have to make a move you know, in the next 3 or 4 weeks, just because, well, they can only dress five defensemen right now, but they're going to have to fill the void left by Slava Voyanov. But I think what you see nowadays is very few trades, and all the trades happen before the trade deadline.
Let me ask you this.
I think also a lot of these GMs are scared to trade.
Well, that was sort of going to be my next point. Yeah. You know, how many of the GMs in the league right now are comfortable in making a trade, and by which, just sort of by the nature of making a move, you sort of put themselves in the spotlight versus sitting back and doing nothing and saying, well, I haven't made my move yet, so how can you adequately mm-hmm. you know, analyze me as a general manager?
I think that's fair. I think a lot of it's easier to sit back. You know, and you know, people will say, well, you have to be patient. There's a balance between patience and activity, you know, being proactive in regards to trading and different kind of player movement. And I think a lot of the GMs, well, you know, you don't take a risk, then again, you don't show your hand as much, and people can't really judge you because they don't really know what's going on. And you're exactly right, Drew. That move is the next move. So how can you be relieved of your duties if you haven't made that move? I think that's part of it. And so that's probably an unfortunate part of it, but these people are making big money. It's their livelihood, and they're supporting families, and so it is what it is.
Yeah, and you know, back to the two teams that I'm looking at right now, and I know the Detroit Red Wings are another team. They're playing a little bit better now. They're in fourth place in the East, Richie. But you know, I look at a team like the Devils, who obviously like, and you know, are they going to make a move? Are they going to wait? You know, at what point do you wait too long and then the season's over? Because as we know, once it gets, you know, close to December and all that, and then you're 4 or 5 points out of a playoff spot, it gets a little bit tougher to make up those points.
Who are you trading, really? That's the thing. You mentioned the long contracts. Well, these long contracts aren't a simple trade anymore. Like, Jeff Carter got himself traded out of Columbus.
Sure.
I mean, sure, he went to Columbus, first of all, and that was a big trade, and they're trying to change the culture there in Philly. But Jeff Carter got his way out of Columbus to LA. It's not very common you see a big guy being traded.
Well, how many years
Rick
ago
Rick Nash in Columbus, too. He wanted out.
Yeah.
Same idea.
And I mean, it's just been so many. I mean, those are guys where they're sort of forcing the other teams, the team they're with, he's forcing their hand. You know, when was the last time you saw a general, like the Thornton trade, because that's the best example, really, where you say...
It was a terrible trade. I mean...
Of course it was a terrible trade.
But I will say this. People in Boston will tell you, sure, they didn't get as much as they ought to have for him, but not having him there opened up a lot of options, money, and if you see what happened with San Jose, he never got it done. So people,
was it Marco Sturm?
It was Sturm, Brad Stewart, and Wayne Primo, I think.
Yeah.
If there's any picks. But
An awful trade based on the talent involved.
Yeah.
But when was the last time you saw a general manager sort of put his neck out on the line and say, you know, and just change, you know,
I think the Sagan trade.
Gar Snow's done it a bunch of times.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the Sagan trade. So it's not like there's none, Drew, but I just think that, you know, again, Jim Nill's a pretty proactive general manager. I think, you know, Gar Snow at times probably too active. But my issue is not with the Peter Chiarellis, who have very, you know, have great rosters and just going to pick and choose once they want to make a move. It's the rosters that aren't very good
that
require big facelifts.
That's more what I'm saying, is the teams that just aren't very good, but they seem to be...
Like Edmonton.
Sure.
Like, at some point, you need to make a move to address your awful defense.
Well, I mean, when
are you going to do that?
At what point in time is the status quo, and I'm not talking about the Jets specifically, but for any team that's in the bottom half of the league, at what point in time is the status quo, you know, does that reach its end point and it's time to shake things up?
And I don't think what we're speaking about here is, you know, a need to force something, make a trade to make a trade. That's not the point of it. The point is when you address need, as opposed to, you know, now granted, Edmonton goes out and gets, you know, Teddy Purcell and... You know, signs Mark Fain and Pouliot, that's what you say. But again, those aren't, I mean, that trade is kind of a Gagne swap for money. There's no actual player for player to get that defenseman that you need kind of thing, because you can't really get these guys in free agency anymore. Well, so it's the idea of...
Trading a real asset for a real asset.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's complicated and it's risky, and you need to, you know, and there's a lot of... Not only are there long-term deals here, Drew, there's also these no trade clauses. I mean, look at, you know, for example, if you look at Ladd and Bufflin, certainly not right now anywhere near the trade wire, but... Some limitations on their movement, right? I believe it's what Ladd is 15 teams he can't go to, and Bufflin can give a 5-team no trade list right there again. So you're already limiting your pool.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to break. When we come back, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette's going to join us. We'll talk about the Montreal Canadiens. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the Montreal Gazette, Pat Hickey. Pat, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Drew. Always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Likewise, Pat. Big night tonight in Montreal, and we'll talk about the Habs in general. But first, should spend a minute or two talking about Guy Lapointe, getting his jersey number retired. Some would say long overdue. The number 5 will go up to the rafters tonight at the Bell Centre. How special of a player was Guy Lapointe, and what's this night going to be like in Montreal?
Well, I think it's going to be a really good night. Guy Lapointe was, in addition to being a great hockey player, just a great guy, a fun guy to be around. A lot of the talk last couple of days, the guys who were around in those days, and I was one of them, remember him for his pranks and practical jokes that he played, always smiling, always had a joke to tell you. And, you know, in addition to the fact that he was a really great hockey player, as a guy that You know, I think he's second in defense scoring behind Larry Robinson. Larry Robinson was telling people the other day about how much Guy Lapointe helped him when he broke into the league and then made him a better hockey player. And, you know, they, in those days, there were the two top defensemen were Bobby Orr, of course, and Larry Robinson. And, you know, Guy Lapointe, as far as an offensive player, was right behind those two. And so I think it's going to be a very good night. As you mentioned before, everybody thought this was overdue, and I'm one of those people who thought that he should have been honored before now.
Pat, moving to the current on-ice version of the Montreal Canadiens, the Habs are off to a 9-4-1 record so far. The Jets are obviously going to be in Montreal on Tuesday to play against the Habs. You know, for our fans, are they as good as their 9-4-1 record?
Well, you know, there are several ways of looking at it. One is this team is better than it has showed so far. They could just easily be 4-9-1. If you look at their games, they've won 4 shootouts. They've won another game in overtime. They've had a lot of third period. They've scored more goals in the third period than they did have in the first two periods combined. And, you know, you can look at it a lot of different ways. Do they show a lot of character by coming back, or are they teams that have slow starts and just they were fortunate to come back to pull it together in time to, you know, pull a victory out? What we can say is they can play a lot better than they have. Carey Price has been okay, but you look at his numbers, 2.94 goals against average, 903 save percentage. And that's not all Carey Price. It's the fact that a lot of times he hasn't gotten a lot of support from his teammates.
Pat, we wanted to ask you about Alex Galchenyuk, and to me he's one of the most fascinating players on this team because I don't think we've really seen the full potential of Alex Galchenyuk. We've really only got bits and pieces of especially the offensive side of his game, but so far this season, I know he's struggled. He's got 8 points there on the season, but do you think he's taking that next step forward to becoming that bona fide first-line player for the Montreal Canadiens?
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And, you know, the thing you have to remember about Alex Galchenyuk, this is his third year in the league. He's still only 20 years old. And, you know, he's one of these guys that they brought him along very slowly. That's the Canadiens' tradition. This year they're letting him go. You know, they're giving him a bigger role. I still think they should use him a little bit more on the power play, but here's a guy with great offensive skills. They're still a little concerned about, you know, the defensive part of the game, but I think he's just fine there. And this is one of these guys that he's going to be a star in this league for a long time.
You know, Pat, you look at the moves that the Habs made over the offseason, and one of them was to trade Daniel Briere to Colorado for P.A. Parenteau. You know, it seemed like Briere and Parenteau weren't getting along with their former coaches, so they've made that switch. So far, how has that worked out?
That's worked out very well. You know, one of the things about Parenteau is he's got 3 game winners in the shootout. I think he appreciates the fact that he's on one of the top 2 lines here. Patrick Waugh made a comment afterwards saying they got rid of him because they knew he couldn't play on one of the top 2 lines, but he's fit in very well here.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette talking about the Habs. The Jets and the Habs will take flight at the Bell Center in Montreal on Tuesday night. Pat, we know that during the offseason there was sort of that saga around PK Subban and the arbitration hearing, and then they eventually got the deal done and he did get his big long-term contract to be with the Habs. Has he changed on or off the ice because of that big contract?
I don't think he's changed off the ice. He's still larger than life. Everywhere you go, you see him. He's on TV shows. And I think he's on a whole bunch of French TV shows here. And I think he's getting an appearance on a Dragon's Den and some other shows. But on the ice, I think that he's pressing a little bit. I think that he feels he has to justify that big contract he has. Defensively, he hasn't played quite as well as he did last year. And the offensive numbers haven't been there. One of the problems is that the power play here has been a disaster. And one of the reasons for that is teams have figured out that all they have to do is just, you know, get in TK's way, and it cuts off a major weapon that they have because they don't have too many other players on the power play who can do anything. They certainly don't have anything down low. you know, most teams like to put a big guy in front of the goaltender. The only guy that goes in front of the goaltender here is Brendan Gallagher, who's all of 5'8". And so that's a big problem for Subban. They only have 3 power play goals this season. One of them was an empty netter. So that gives you an idea of how bad the power play is.
Pat, when you look at this defense and Josh George is going to Buffalo and adding Tom Gilbert, how have the Habs been affected by losing George's and then Tom Gilbert essentially replacing him on defense?
Well, they're bigger. It's hard to say. I don't think they're quite, even though they're bigger, they're not quite as physical. You know, Gilbert's he's big, but he's not a real physical player. He's a better offensive player. What they had to do, though, is they had to find room for the youngsters, Tenorti and Beaulieu. It looks like Beaulieu is the temporary winner for the sixth defense spot. Mike Weaver is sort of Josh George's light. He blocks shots. He's good on the PK. But, you know, I think what they figured out was that George wasn't going to be a top 4 guy here. And he had a few years left on the contract, which paid, I think, almost close to $4 million. And they just figured that it was a good time to make some changes there and then open some room for the young guys. They're going to be a work in progress. They still have a lot to learn, but you have to find out now whether they can play. They're both first-round draft choices, Beaulieu and Tenorti, and you've got a lot invested in them. It's time to find out whether they can play regularly.
Pat, you look at the fourth line, and the Habs went out in the offseason and signed Manny Malhotra. Adds a nice character element to the squad. Doesn't have any points this year thus far, but is leading the league, tied with Patrice Bergeron in faceoff percentage. Is that the main? Obviously, is that the main reason that they bring him in, or how is, aside from the faceoff aspect, has he provided maybe a little bit more stability and veteran leadership in a locker room that lost Gionta and Georges?
Yeah, I think he's very, from all accounts, he's very vocal in the locker room. That's a plus. This is also a team that in the last 3 or 4 years has been terrible in the faceoff circle. And not only is he winning the key faceoffs, you know, in the defensive zone and when they're trying to, when they're protecting a lead, but he's also helped the other guys out there. This team, I think in the 14 games they've played, they've had the edge. They've had won over 50% of the faceoffs in 12 of those games. And Lars Eller is over 50%. David Lahanen is over 50%. So you know, this is a turnaround for this team that you know, was not very good in the faceoffs in the past. And I think Malhotra is a big part of that.
Pat, we wanted to ask you about Gerard Gallant, who obviously left to go to the Florida Panthers. What's the impact been as far as the loss of him on that coaching staff? What's the impact been?
It's hard to tell. I don't think that we can make a judgment one way or the other. I think losing him was, it was not good because he was very popular with the players, and I think he's the guy that served as the conduit between the players and the head coach and management. But I think Dan Lacroix, who was brought in there to, you know, fill that spot, is doing a similar sort of job, and it's too early to tell whether they've completely filled that spot, but it seems like everything's going pretty smoothly so far.
Pat, what's your read on the East so far? I mean, covering the Jets here in the West, it seems like a very high caliber of play in the Western Conference. The East seems to kind of be all over the place. Has that been your read as well?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, there's no doubt that the better hockey is being played in the Western Conference, and the better teams are in the Western Conference. You look at Atlantic Division, for example. There's 6 teams that are in in a position where they're close to, you know, a playoff spot. Mm-hmm. There's been no real separation with the exception of Buffalo so far. So I think it's going to be very competitive. The Canadiens get off to that hot start, but they're now they're second place, and when you start figuring in some of the games at hand, if the teams come and win those games, they could be in third or fourth place and battling for one of those final playoff spots.
Pat, we'll let you go on this last question. A lot was made in the offseason about the Habs acquisition or signing of Jiří Sekáč, supposedly the best player not currently playing in the NHL. He's got 1 point in 7 games so far for the Habs. Is this a case of just a player sort of having to transition to the North American style of game, or is there a possibility that Mr. Sekáč wasn't worth all the hype that he got in the offseason?
No, I think in the long run they're going to find he's worth all the hype. He's got lots of speed. He's got good hockey sense out there. It's true he only has the one goal, but and there was a while. There were 6 games there where he sat. But if you look at the skill set that this guy has and the fact that he's willing to work hard, these are things. He's going to be a very valuable player in this league.
Pat Hickey covers the Montreal Canadiens for the Montreal Gazette. Pat, appreciate the time as always.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks very much, Pat. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Woo-hoo.
Big thank you to Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette for joining us on the program. In case you missed any of it, it will be available for download on iTunes on TSN1290.ca and on IllegalCurve.com. You can also find the interview we conducted earlier in the show with Dean Brown and or Saturday Spotlight with Barry Melrose, all available at any of those three fine locations. Speaking of fine locations, this segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years.
Had a good borscht there this week.
Yeah, the borscht there is excellent. Our friend Aaron.
I had a good borscht there last Saturday with Ezzy and Laura.
Did you? I don't remember you having borscht.
No, I had borscht. I had borscht and a grilled cheese. It was
you
very
did
nice
have the, I remember the grilled
after
cheese.
After the show last Saturday, myself, Ezzy, and Laura, we all went for a very nice lunch.
Where did I go?
You went to the office to clean your office.
That's right, yes.
I had the breakfast quesadilla.
That's true, you did.
Our friend Aaron tells me that there's a new menu item.
Oh.
Fall salad.
Oh.
And he tells me it's been a big hit there. Roasted squash, beets, tamari seeds, Granny Smith apples, so it's, you know, cut up, obviously, not full apples in that salad.
Not red delicious apples?
But yeah, seasonal fall salad, so that's
a new...
Can you
just clarify that the salad is, that the apples are cut up in the salad, it's not just an entire apple?
Yeah, that's right. I don't know what tamari seeds are, but they sound delicious.
Norm MacDonald did a whole routine on the red delicious apple.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I was Hugh wondering McIntosh. Why you said that.
That was such a good... So I got to tell a funny story quickly here before we get into the other stuff, but... So Huss
the other stuff being the purpose of the show.
Yeah. So Richie, as I mentioned earlier in the show, Richie, Remus, and Remus's brother, who we call Ramus, was also there. Huss was there with his brother. So in the middle of the show.
Huss has a brother?
Yeah, Duncan.
Oh.
Yeah, very nice guy. I've met him many times. So in the middle of the show, Norm MacDonald starts talking to a couple of guys in the front row. And he goes, oh, are you guys twins? Well, that guy's wearing a Kansas City Royals hat, so we're like instantly thinking, you know, that's Huss.
Yeah.
Who else is wearing a Kansas City Royals hat, right? Not that other people can't be, but what are the chances, right? And so we're laughing. We're like, okay, Huss is there. We'll talk to him after the show's over. And then after the show, I look over Richard. I'm like, oh, there's Huss. And then he turns around and it's like, not Huss at all. Like the guy's like 6'3", doesn't look like Huss at all, has like a big goatee. Anyways.
When you meet Hustler's brother, Duncan, do you ask him for a donut every time?
That's bad.
True. Come on. Wow.
Thought it might be okay.
We didn't need a new host.
This is a low point for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, and God. The show has reached a new low. Let's talk about coaching salaries in the NHL. You know, a lot of scuttlebutt, of course. Everybody's keeping a close eye on Mike Babcock of the Detroit Red Wings. He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. You know, and you look at the coaching salaries, and coaches finally in the NHL, among the big four sports, they'd sort of been the lower paid of most of them over the last number of years of coaches or managers.
Certainly compared to the NBA and NFL.
Exactly. Joel Quenneville leads the NHL at $2.75 million per season in terms of a coaching salary, which makes sense given the Blackhawks' success as of late. Claude Julien just re-signs with the Boston Bruins. He's going to get $2.5 million to be the coach of the Bruins. What can Mike Babcock expect on the open market given where the coaching salaries have gone in the NHL? He currently makes $2 million a year.
Well, I mean, how much can he get? Well, I mean, I think he's getting at minimum $4 million at minimum. Probably you're talking $4.5 to $5 million.
So he's going to be almost double the next highest paid coach?
From people you talk to around the league, it's his goal to set the standard for coaches now in the National Hockey League. He feels like that is his responsibility. And if that's the case, then, you know, he's going to get that money from somebody. You know, whether it be, well, Pittsburgh rumors probably died down a bit, but whether it be Detroit or, you know, again, you've heard a lot of rumors about Shanahan in Toronto there. I mean, there's not exactly a shortage of cash there. And how much will Mike Gillich and Ken Holland offer him in Toronto? Sorry, Detroit, excuse me, it'll be interesting. One question I have is how willing will a general manager be? Now, a general manager in Toronto, I don't know how much power Dave Notis has, but how willing will a general manager be to pay Mike Babcock a heck of a lot more than he's making?
Well, forget about Dave Notis, because, I mean, even though he's technically the general manager, look at Brendan Shanahan. He would be the highest paid team employee currently in Toronto.
I don't know what he makes.
I don't know what he makes either, but I don't think it's... Do you think it's in the $4 to $5 million range?
No.
Neither do I.
I wouldn't guess that, yeah.
So this is going to be a situation where...
You never know, though.
Babcock could likely make more than his supposed boss.
Well, that's my question, right? Is Ken Holland going to offer him more than what Ken Holland makes? And if he's not willing to do that, and I don't think Ken Holland's the kind of guy who would look at it that way, but I'm just saying, like, it's the organizational structure. Remember here, Detroit, for example, was a team that never wanted to pay anybody more than Nick Lidstrom.
Sure.
So I don't think it'd be Holland necessarily, as it'd be like Mike Gillich saying, well, nobody should make more than the guy who's running the show, and that's Ken Holland. He's arguably the best in the business.
Well, do you think Stan Bowman, the general manager in Chicago, makes more than Joel Quenneville's $2.75 million? I'd be surprised.
I would think it's...
Peter Chiarelli in Boston making more than Claude Julien's $2.5 million?
Probably pretty similar in both cases.
I would think it'd be comparable.
Yeah.
You know, now... I can't believe...
I think Babcock will obliterate Quenneville's contract, though, in terms of like the scale of coaching contracts.
And his track record really justifies it. If you look at what he's done with Detroit, making the playoffs every year, he's obviously got the Stanley Cup, right? The Olympics, two golds at the Olympics. I mean, he's the best coach in the league. I know you think that. I think that. This Detroit Red Wings team... I remember us talking about this at the beginning of the season. Are the Red Wings going to make the playoffs? They had some injuries, but look at where the Detroit Red Wings are right now. They're in fourth in the East. They seem to always be in a playoff spot or position, right? So
he's an excellent coach.
If there's any coach that can probably demand $4 million a year, as Richie said he might get, it's probably Babcock. And Quenneville, he's been a coach in this league for a long time. He's got the Stanley Cups, so he deserves that money. I mean, but... I guess the hot rumor of him going to Toronto, I don't know. I still see there being a really good chance that he stays in Detroit, but I wouldn't be surprised at all with what's going on in Toronto because there's uncertainty with Randy Carlyle in Toronto.
What if he gets to the offseason and Toronto says, we don't care about the coaching scale. We're going to spend money outside the system because it's not in the cap system. And we're going to offer him 5 years, $30 million. Would you be absolutely floored if you heard that?
No. I mean, if it comes down to if they need to sweeten the pot even more to get the guy they want, if he's their guy, as he probably should be given his coaching acumen and his coaching record, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, like you said, teams that have the financial wherewithal should spend a lot on all the ancillary, non-salary cap-related expenditures.
I agree.
Scouting, buying free agents potentially, although that's somewhat cap-related as well.
That's cap-related, yeah.
But, or sort of like non-NHL free agents is sort of what I meant there. But, scouting, coaching, system analysis, if there's a fancy, computer program or camera program that can track players and their health, spend the money. What do you have to lose on it? I mean, it certainly makes sense. From a player versus coach perspective, is there any potential for conflict if the coach is making $6 million and he's more than most of the players?
Look at the NFL. They all make big-time cash, more than most of the players on the squad. And I just think it gives the coach more power, frankly. Coach, you're not getting it. If you guys sign a guy to a five-year deal for, $30 million, that guy walks in that locker room, if he goes to Toronto, for example, that guy who walks in the locker room, Bozak, Kessel, whoever it is, knows that guy across from me, right, is not going anywhere. No, not with that contract, he's not.
You could also look at it like, do the players respect a coach if he's not making a lot of money?
It's a good point, Ezzy.
like some of the low, and we should mention the coaches' salaries aren't published.
They're not all published.
They're not all published. So we don't know how much every single coach makes, but I believe we know most of them or some of them.
This was on Insider Trading earlier this week on TSN, and they had a list of, they had 10 coaches, and they were able to give the salaries for those 10 coaches.
And I'll be honest with you. I think for the most part, NHL players don't really think about this at all. Like, I think that, you know, the salary cap stuff has a lot more of an impact for management, obviously, and and us in the media who talk about this type of stuff. I don't really think, like, on the ice, these guys are, I mean, I think they're aware of how much these money everybody makes. Like, everybody knows Alexander Semin makes $7 million, but I just don't think that really changes how players deal with players. I mean, it's interesting to think about.
I think it does, though, Izzy. I think the dynamic in the locker room changes by the structure of who's making the most money.
I mean,
Semin's making $1 million, they don't care that he's lollygagging. He's making seven. You despise him, probably.
But I think you're still, as far as what you have to do on a nightly basis and what you have to do in practice and in games, I think that shouldn't change for you. So you might look at him a little bit differently and say, well, he makes a lot of money. Does he really deserve it? But does that really change how you go out there and play on the ice? I don't think it does. And I don't think it changes how someone's going to prepare for Semin, whether he makes $7 million or $1 million. I think it's more so one of those, I guess, superficial aspects of the National Hockey League. It's superficial meaning I don't think that, I just don't think that when you're preparing for a team, you're putting dollar signs on all the players. I think, you know, but
I think it's more of an internal conflict it creates than anything against the other team. There's no way that the teammates in Carolina don't look at Alex Semin and think you are the biggest dog in the NHL, making
but what is he supposed
to
do? They gave him that money.
I know. I don't blame the player, but I'm sure that the teammates themselves would like to see him be a little bit more accountable for the grossly inflated contract he received. Now, they don't fault him for it, but they fault him for not putting in effort.
You don't think those dynamics are in the locker room? I mean, these guys, you know, it's not like everybody's lovey-dovey in there. I mean, there's factions and there's different things that play into whether you like a guy or not. But back to the coaching, I think Babcock will exceed $20 million easy on this contract. This will be at least 4 or 5 years. It's at least $4 million, at least, which is 1.25 more than what Quenneville's making right now.
What did Joe Maddon, when he went to the Cubs, what did he
say? It was 525.
525. 5 years, $25 million. Yeah. It seems like, I mean, it's not unreasonable, especially if he's going to Toronto, where, I mean, if Mike Babcock determines, look, Toronto's where I want to go, and I'm going to, and Toronto, you know, publicly acknowledges, or more or less publicly acknowledges, that Mike Babcock's their guy, they're going to have to pay him whatever demands he comes with.
So I thought even six wouldn't shock me.
And his coaching brethren are saying to Mike Babcock, look, you're a free agent. You're going to change the salary structure for the rest of us for the rest of, you know, for at least the next 10, 20, 30 years.
Forever.
That's right, forever. And never really drops down. You won't see them going back to making, you know, $750,000 a year or anything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, fill your boots, get your money, and we're all going to benefit from it. You know, similar to free agency and players when it first came out.
Well, it's a whole Al MacInnis story with Bob Goodnow calling him and yelling at him for taking less money to stay in St. Louis. It happens all the time.
Sure. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Los Angeles Kings. They're going to play tonight with five defensemen. We'll tell you why. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca is where you can find us online. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Alex, doing a formidable job behind the board, getting us on and off the air on this Saturday afternoon. The Jets and the Los Angeles Kings. Not the Los Angeles Kings. The Jets and the Ottawa Senators. Tonight, 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290. We're going to talk about the Los Angeles Kings because they are $160 short of being able to play with six defensemen tonight.
Is it that low?
It's that low. It's $160.
I could lend them like $160 if they really needed it.
Yeah. Because the
sure?
No, I can't.
Maybe without going into overdraft protection? Anyways, the Los Angeles Kings are right up against the salary cap, and we know that they were going to be close against the salary cap at any point in time this year. That's only been exacerbated by the suspension to defenseman Slava Voynov while he is being investigated on domestic violence accusations. That occurred on October 20th. So we're into about the three-week or so period where Slava Voynov has been getting paid by the Los Angeles Kings, has not been able to play for the Los Angeles Kings, but his salary cap still counts against the Kings' total. Robin Regier is banged up. He's injured. And because of their salary cap problems, the Kings are not able to call up somebody from their AHL affiliate in Manchester, because to call up a minimum salaried player leaves them $160 over the salary cap. Should the NHL have done, if they were going to suspend Slava Voyanov with pay while he goes through this domestic violence situation and the investigation, should the NHL have granted the Los Angeles Kings some sort of salary cap relief to go along with that suspension?
It's a really complicated question, Drew. I mean, yeah, you think probably some form to be able to allow them to ice. You know, if I'm looking at the NHL's perspective, obviously you have a slippery slope here in terms of Voinov and what he's done and how you act quickly in light of the NFL incidents. I think you also have a competitive issue here. And by that, I mean, first off, are you making the Kings more apt for injury by playing shorthanded? Are you jeopardizing the quality of the game that fans are paying for by not allowing them to ice a full team?
Yeah, well, we know they don't care about the fans.
Yeah, they don't care about the fans. But, you know, I think those are all factors, and I think they just acted quickly, and the problem now is NHL and NHLPA can't agree on who's going to take, you know, what the arrangement is going to be here and how the money is allotted. That gets into an escrow issue, which is quite complicated. But this is something that you would have hoped that they would have brainstormed prior, you know, maybe in light of the incidents in the NFL, but prior to this Voinov incident coming out. Because it seems like they're doing it on the fly, and they can't agree. And the NHL is, NHL, at the end of the day, is kind of saying the PA, well, take it or leave it right now. The PA is saying, well, we're not going to take all this money and have it cut into our portion. And that's the stance, though, that you have. What's the solution? Probably somewhere in the middle, like it usually is. But who's going to move to do that? And will the Kings be healthy enough that they won't have to worry about it if the guys are able to play? The complicated stuff, and I've been following it not as closely as I'd like to, but I just think that if you're reasonable here, you can come up with a solution. But reasonable in terms of the NHL and NHLPA is not, and the way they sit down and have discussions is not exactly something that comes easy to them.
Well, it's interesting. They both agreed that Slava Voyanov should be suspended mm-hmm. with pay.
Well, it's a public perception issue.
Sure.
And then the pay issue, of course, is he hasn't been convicted.
Right, of course. And I mean, and that's a public perception, and we saw how the NFL got raked over mm-hmm. the coals mm-hmm. with how they poorly handled the Ray Rice incident.
Absolutely.
And the Adrian
Absolutely.
Peterson incident and everything else. But both sides, the NHL and the NHLPA and the Los Angeles Kings, they all agreed that Slava Voyanov should be suspended or shouldn't play, should get paid, because otherwise he'd be able to take them to court, I'm sure, and let the situation play itself out. But that's where the agreement seems to have fallen apart. To me, and as you all that you get in, it seems bizarre that the Kings are being punished, you know, in multiple different ways. One, they have a player who is a very good player who's being suspended prior to receiving any sort of due process, but I can live with that, given the public perception. But two, to then not allow them the wherewithal to be able to field a mm-hmm. fully competitive team
I agree with that.
On a nightly basis, I think is almost a bridge too far for the NHL in this instance.
Yeah, and there's a few things here. On Thursday, Voyanov's agent, Roland Hedges, said that he's going to try to get Voyanov reinstated before he has to face his hearing with the prosecutor's office in California there. So it looks like he's trying to get Voyanov reinstated. I have no idea if that's even an option right now, but I guess he's making that attempt. And Rich Hammond of the Orange County Register tweeted out earlier today that it's confirmed, that they're going with the five defensemen. And, you know, you'd have to think that they'd call up a guy like Jeff Schultz, who played for the Kings, or Derek Forbort, one of these guys.
It's got to be a minimum salaried player.
So it would probably be him from Manchester. And just to have six defensemen. And they played, you know, earlier this week with one. They were short of forward. But it's easier to do it when you're short of forward as opposed to short of defenseman. But I think you're right, Drew. I mean, to me, and I was asking Richie this, you know, Is this because something's not in the CBA to add some type of temporary relief here? I mean, this is kind of a situation that you don't see very often, where the NHL suspends a player, and then because of salary cap issues, they're basically forced to keep paying him. I mean, you got to let them call up a defenseman here. It's pretty ridiculous, isn't it, that they can't call up a defenseman?
So what the PA is saying, what the NHL is saying, is if you're calling somebody up, that counts as part of the pie. And the PA is saying, well, we're incurring all that responsibility there, and if you put the salary being paid for a suspended player out of the system, then we're okay with that.
That goes to the escrow issue.
Yes, that's
and
right.
Again, the escrow issue is the...
I see both sides in this one.
Sure. The escrow issue is the percentage of each player's paycheck,
yes,
that is held back and put into a an account somewhere.
Escrow account, yeah.
To make sure that at the end of the year, the NHL has not paid too much money, mm-hmm, in salaries. That's right. What it boils down to. I mean, that's what the escrow issue is involved, and the NHLPA is saying, we don't want to have a bigger cut of escrow go against all the other players in the league because of the Kings situation.
But Richie, to me, it doesn't seem like the NHL is punishing the LA Kings ownership and management. It seems like this could set a bad precedent.
In what sense?
Well, to me, that's why they're not doing it, because there isn't anything there. So if this happens again, and a team wants salary cap relief, they have to give it to them because of what happened with this situation. Like, to me, it seems like there should be a solution to this. Like, the LA Kings can't be happy that they're playing with five defensemen tonight. I mean, they need to win in the standings.
I'm sure they're seething about it. I mean,
well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah. like you can't figure some way out to get salary cap, like emergency salary cap relief, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they're severely handicapped in that sense. You can only play. But like, what happens in this game if someone goes down early? What happens if two guys go down? You're down to three defensemen. You have to play, like,
well,
you know,
exactly.
Is Trevor Lewis going to play defense for the LA Kings tonight?
The NHL is, but again, the NHL is looking at this from a bigger picture, right?
The NHL is looking from it, yeah, that they don't want to. Had they handled if the Semyon Varlamov incident happened this year, mm-hmm, as opposed to last year,
right,
remember, he got arrested last year for domestic violence, or there was a charge made against him. It eventually, nothing ever happened with it, mm-hmm, for whatever reason. But if the circumstances of the world that we live in, vis-a-vis professional sports and domestic violence, have changed over those 12 months. I don't necessarily think that the NHL has handled this incorrectly in terms of suspending Voyanov and letting the police and the detectives and the district attorney do their job. He's getting paid. Had they said to him, you're suspended without pay, mm-hmm, then that would be, mm-hmm, too much for me. Then there would be no due process. But they are paying him, and they're saying, just stay away from the team while you get this situation settled. So on that hand, I'm okay with how they're handling it. But the fact that they're also then doubly penalizing the Los Angeles Kings is something that they should have resolved with the NHLPA. And there's certainly a middle ground to be found here.
But it's a slippery slope for both of them, right? That's exactly the problem. You know, how much money is it actually for a guy to get called up, and how much more does it contribute to the share? Really, minimal amount.
Sure.
But the PA doesn't want to start a precedent there. Same thing for the NHL.
That's what I said. Precedent.
They start giving out breaks in NHL. They don't want to do that either. So both these guys are looking big picture, not the Kings today, which unfortunately hurts the Kings. And I think they're put in a very difficult and unfair position.
Richie, I'm not even a lawyer, and I'm bringing out those big legal terms like precedent.
Yeah, it's like three syllables.
Yep.
That's pretty good for you. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. Following us, Gary Lawless, Andrew Hustler Patterson, Hustler and Lawless for 2 hours, getting you set for the Jets and the Senators tonight at 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Of course, Rick Ralph going to be along with the pregame show from 5 until 6. And then we turn it over to Dennis Bayak, Shane Knighty, and Paul Edmonds for the call of tonight's game between the Winnipeg Jets and the Ottawa Senators.
Dennis and Shane having some good tie battles lately.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you found a new, you're like a dog with a bone, and you enjoy that NHL ties.
It was Remus that found it first.
I know, and now you're fully on it.
What a shock.
Yeah, I think Shane has a better tie, and I think they both have good ties, but then, you know, Dennis won the first one, and then Shane won. And
you're buying a tie for tonight, apparently. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, I'm a little low on ties. Drew gave me a couple hand-me-down ties about a year ago, but
did you?
You know, it's a big night tonight.
But you know all the ones that get criticized in the press box?
Yeah.
Those are all mine.
Really?
They're decent ties.
Why'd you give them to Desi?
They've got mustard stains all over them. But.
I was gonna. Yeah, well, that's your business. I was, you know, they were. I had too many ties. It's time to refresh the tie closet, and so I was gonna, you know, give them to Goodwill. And Goodwill, I just assumed, was going to give them to Ezzy anyway, so I just cut out the middleman and gave them straight to Ezzy.
It's funny, because we were at Goodwill yesterday, but not the Goodwill store. Like, there's a new bar called Goodwill on Portage.
That's nice.
Yeah,
yeah, we're excited. You know, going to be at the breast cancer fundraiser tonight. It's called Booby Ball. Mm-hmm. So your, I guess, future sister-in-law is heavily involved in that, Richard. So we're Legal Curve is stepping out for a night out on the town.
Are we going to do limos, champagne, that type of night, or is it just going to be like beer and?
I was just actually going to hope you were going to pick me up.
I'm not driving.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, the place looks great for tonight.
Does it? Yes. Okay. Well, that's good to hear. Very exciting.
I'm taking the bus.
You're taking the bus. Yeah. That's a good idea too. Looking forward to that. Obviously,
support Winnipeg Transit, Drew.
Yeah. Obviously, a very good cause with breast cancer fundraiser.
Yes, we're looking forward to it. Should be very nice.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah. Some odds and ends from around the NHL world. NHL Chief Operating Officer John Collins says that jersey sponsorship is coming to the league. It's inevitable, he says. It's the next area in which the NHL is going to, you know, gain some advertising dollars.
Well, where else are they going to get money from? They got the TV deals are locked up, the U.S. and the Canadian for a long time. They're killing people on ticket prices, so they can't do that anymore. I mean, there's only so much you can go there. And then where else are you going to get it from?
You're not. That's exactly it. They say they're going to bring in as much as $120 million in additional revenue.
At least I foresee it being a lot more than that.
Sure. Do you have any problem with it?
Yeah, I do, but it just...
It doesn't matter.
I can't stand that stuff, but it's going to be what it's going to be. I'm over it. I used to take bigger issue with those things. I mean, I don't like it. I like that tradition of the jersey being kind of sacred in that way, but I know they're going to be selling everything they possibly can. So I actually was surprised to see that you have a new... tattoo on your head that they're taking money off of. Like, that's what they're gonna do. They're gonna literally sell everything. They're gonna sell on the backboard. You're probably gonna see advertisement on the glass in some form. Like,
you've already seen that,
but like, not virtual. You're gonna see so much stuff, more ads on the ice maybe. So they're gonna sell everything they possibly can.
Yeah, Drew, I love that new goldenpalace.com tattoo that you have.
I figured, you know, instead of putting a spray on my head, I figured I'd just put the goldenpalacetattoo.com there. It makes it seem like I have a full head of hair in that case.
No, but this is a situation. Richie just, you know, nailed it. I mean, we might not like it, but like, do we have a choice? I mean, you know, NHL CEO John Collins is saying that it's going to happen. And, you know, we've seen this in the European leagues, Richie. We've seen this in international hockey. You know, the Spengler Cup, you see all the, you know, the Skoda and all that.
Yeah,
and
they're ugly.
And it looks bad. I mean, like a classic, there's nothing like the classic logo, the Montreal Canadiens logo. Like, now the Montreal Canadiens logo is going to have like a corporate sponsor on. I mean, but I mean,
I agree with you.
It's going to happen. So, you know, it's kind of like complaining for no reason. So.
One thing the NHL does is takes the most money possible. They're never going to not take the most money possible.
No, but I like how I'm sure that they're going to somehow spin it so that it's to the benefit of fans or something.
Yeah, those ticket prices after the lockout, right?
Yeah, exactly. The ticket prices, they just plummeted, didn't they? Something like that. Bob Nicholson, he was speaking at a dinner last night, I believe, in Edmonton or somewhere along that way, and he said that he expects that the NHL is going to go back to Pyeongchang, South Korea, for the 2018 mm-hmm. Winter Games. Are you surprised?
No.
There's a lot of talk that it was going to be done after Sochi.
The players want it, and it'll happen. I think it's as simple as that. The players want it, and they'll make it happen.
Yeah, I don't know if the NHL wants it mm-hmm. as much, but the players do want it. The experience that they have at the Olympics, they all love
it. That's
right. And they strive to it. And, you know, going back to what we were talking about, I think there is a bit of a letdown this year, because remember last year, I mean, we were talking about the Olympics 3, 4, 5 months leading up to the Olympics in February 2014. It's awesome. And, you know, even though the games are low scoring, and we saw Canada, you know, with the shutouts in the Olympics winning the gold, I mean, people still love it, and the American fans have gotten into it, especially you know, post Miracle on Ice, but even in the last couple of Olympics, you know, Canada and the U.S. going against each other in 2002. But you know, it's just one of those things that even though the NHL and the NHLPA and are going to have the World Cup and all of that, I just think that, you know, as Richie said, the players like it so much that I think it's probably going to happen. They'll probably figure out a way to generate more revenue this time around. I think Sochi was, they didn't make a lot of money, if anything.
What I like about the players is that the players want to go and don't get paid. Like, I like that. I think that's awesome.
Michael Delzato, the Philadelphia Flyers.
Okay, here we go.
Dear God.
Sort of had a checkered last couple of years, let's say. He had a lot of high hopes for this guy. He came into the league, and he was highly touted, and he was really performing well, and he's sort of seen a drop-off in his play.
Sort of.
He's seen a drop-off in his play going from the Rangers to the Predators, and then he couldn't find a job this offseason, and he eventually ends up in the Philadelphia Flyers. Gets into a little hot water this past week with Lisa Ann. Lisa Ann, in case you don't know, is a porn star.
Adult entertainer.
Yeah, I thought that's what you were going to say.
Sorry, adult entertainer. Well, she's a porn star. I mean, let's call a spade is what she is. No judgment involved. But apparently Michael Delzato was trying to use her to get dates while out on the road. You think this is another black mark against him in his NHL career? You think this is going to have some sort of ramifications aside from us chuckling about it on air?
Oh, God.
You know what's funny? You know, Delzato's actually played in all 13 games for the Flyers. He's got 7 points. They're actually pretty happy with the way he's played on the ice in Philly. This is just funny. I mean, you know, he's asking Lisa Ann to get her. I mean, for him, it's
hasn't
just
been
one of those.
Confirmed, has he?
Well, she claims that.
Yeah, allegedly. We'll put allegedly in front of everything.
All I'm going to say is that the funny part was that she said on Twitter that he had blocked her, as if that was going to stop all of the tweeting about this.
Yeah, exactly. There's something. I think there's a lot more to the story.
You think?
Let's finish it up with cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
My cheer this week to Rick Jeanneret, who's going through a difficult time there in Buffalo, and he dropped the puck last night with Jim Kelly at the Sabres game, which is pretty emotional, and he's obviously the beloved one in Buffalo, but everybody who's a hockey fan knows Rick Jeanneret and some of the greatest calls, you know, in hockey history, so wish him the best and hope he turns it around.
Has he?
Well, I'm going to cheer Michael Delzato. No,
your new mentor.
You know, I didn't have a cheer prepared
because and it's rare that we do cheers and jeers on the show.
I was doing a lot of other planning, and there was Norm MacDonald yesterday, and there's been a lot going on.
During all these breaks, you couldn't have thought of a cheer.
Well, I was focusing on the upcoming segment. I'll cheer Derek Stepan. He's coming back to the lineup for the New York.
he's one of the worst cheers of all time.
Okay, just.
I'm going to wrap it up here. I've done it before, but I'm going to jeer your cheer.
That's definitely jeer worthy.
He's coming back from an injury, and the Rangers need him.
I'm going to cheer Bobby Ryan because he's a game time decision tonight.
Whether or not he comes into the lineup or not.
Matter.
You know, sometimes I wonder why I do the show with you guys. You just mock me every week.
Yeah, but we would do that without the show also.
That's true.
No real difference there.
Yep.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. Of course, Tuesday is Remembrance Day.
Yes, it is.
So I'm going to cheer all of our servicemen and servicewomen.
Yep.
Yes, that's a good cheer.
Wear a poppy. I don't care. Get a poppy. Go wherever you need to go. Get a poppy. They're going to be wearing poppies on the back of their helmets during the Ottawa-Winnipeg game.
Tim Campbell tweeted that out.
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. The Jets are right. So that's good for them. It's going to be cheer, Remembrance Day. Go to a service if you can. And, of course, if you get the opportunity, shake hands with a serviceman or servicewoman as they've sacrificed themselves for the country. A couple minutes before we have to go, guys. Your keys to the game tonight between the Jets and the Senators?
Well, you're looking at a fast-paced game, and I think you want to play a skating game. I don't think that's an issue at all. With the Senators on defense, it's a very similar, I think, to playing against Pittsburgh. You're talking more of an offensive defense. For the most part, you know, you're going to see a lot of Erik Karlsson. You want to get the puck in his corner. You want to hammer on him a little bit, and you want to use your size and speed against the squad. I think that's going to be important. In terms of defending against them, I think it's ensuring that you're playing a smart game. And by that, I mean there's no real guy out there who's going to kill you on this Ottawa team. Okay, they're going to come in lines. They're going to come with speed. And you just got to make sure that you're not trying to do too much. So, I mean, a lot of the cliche stuff. But Ottawa, and I'm looking forward to seeing them. But this is a team that's certainly beatable.
That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guest, Dean Brown of TSN 1200 in Ottawa, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, and Barry Melrose of ESPN.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website, as I said, is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Alex and Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.